across Australia on ABC Local Radio. You're with Rod Quinn.
And this is the Overnights program. Now, coming up right about now, we're going to talk about not necessarily what's the greatest film of all time, but why film fans are so fascinated with writing lists. It's not just the list of the worst films of all time that Michael Medved really got into in the 80s, 70s and 80s, I think. The best films of all time, as decided by Sight and Sound magazine and the British Film Institute. There's the best films of the year. You always got to count down the top 10 films. What are the 10 best films of the year? We have them done officially, I suppose, by the Oscars and by the Golden Globes and a whole lot of awards. There are more awards for films there are than just about any other form of art, I would think. That's a way of making a list. So we're talking about film lists this morning, sparked by the fact that the music we're hearing from is from the movie Vertigo. Vertigo has been named the greatest film of all time. But maybe just beyond that, there are lists that you've made yourself about movies, about which ones to see, which ones to avoid. Perhaps you, like me, set yourself a task to watch everything nominated for the Oscar for Best Picture from 1944 onwards. And why not? Gives you a good cross-section of American film and indeed world film at some point. Maybe you've thought, you know what? There's a new James Bond movie coming out. I want to watch the other, whatever they are, 24 or 25 Bond films, just to keep up to date. I want to watch all the Woody Allen films, as bad as some of them are. Do you want to watch every Australian film that comes out? Have you made a list of all those films? Do you make a list of all the films that you sit through? Now, I do. David Stratton does. There's about 20,000 on his list, I think. Something like that. We spoke to David Anson once, the film critic for Newsweek. He's seen over 7,000 films. Started making his list in 1950. And yet when I asked him his favourite film of all time, he told me The Third Man, a film made the year before he began making his list. What does that mean? I don't know. I'm starting to get out of my... starting to go crazy here. Richard Gray is our film expert. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
This is the music from Vertigo. It's lovely music, isn't it?
It's good. I could sit here and listen to this for the next hour, actually.
We may have to do that if no one rings. Every 10 years, Sight and Sound magazine gets the critics panel together, I suppose, and asks them what are the greatest films ever made. What have they come up with over the years?
Well, the list started in 1952, and for the large part, it's remained fairly static until this year. Vertigo, for the first time, knocked the staple film Citizen Kane off the list for the first time since 1962. But the list it's the BFI, which is the British Film Institute, and they get together a list of critics every year. And since 2002, they've also invited directors as well to contribute to the list. But over the years, pretty much from 1962 onwards, the greatest film of all time has been Citizen Kane. Every year, every 10 years, it's remained the greatest film of all time. Except this year, controversially, Vertigo took the top slot.
And Citizen Kane dropped to number two.
Number two.
So what a failure.
It is. I mean, it's only managed to hold on to that spot for, what, 60 years? And 40 years, in fact. You know, I think, Orson Welles, I'm sorry, you've had your day.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, 1962, it's only a couple of years, 3 years after Vertigo was released. So it was unlikely to become the best film of all time as soon as that. But by that stage, Citizen Kane had been out for 20 years. So
yeah.
People had... And you also got to remember, people don't get the chance to see, or in those days, didn't get the chance to see films that you had to go to special screenings or revivals. And so if you'd seen Citizen Kane or Vertigo or whatever when it came out, you may not have seen it for 10 years or 15 years or so when you had to come to make this list.
Yeah, I think the most recent list is sort of indicative of the fact that we've got a DVD culture now. We've got people being able to reassess films. I mean, Vertigo, when it came out, was not considered the great film that it is today. People have looked at that over the years and actually seen many things now that that have been influential over the last few decades since it's been released. But, you know, the critics' top 10 poll when it came out originally, the very first year, neither Citizen Kane or Vertigo were in that top 10 list. It was Bicycle Thieves, an Italian film, that topped the list. And there was, you know, fewer critics that were that were contributing to the poll. In fact, if you look back then, it was 25 mentions of Bicycle Thieves got it to the number one spot, where it took 191 mentions this year for Vertigo to contribute. So it gives you an idea of how many critics are now contributing to this poll. I think it's to do with the changing nature of changing taste in film as well. So you can these lists are only. And, you know, people reassess films every 10 years, which is why it's great to have these lists.
In 62, it's not number one. I don't even know whether it was on the list in 1962. I'm guessing it probably wasn't Vertigo.
Vertigo wasn't, no. And in fact, it doesn't seem to really appear in the top 10 until 1982.
Okay, which was at a time when Hitchcock was kind of out of favour. He'd been dead for 6 years or so, I think. Well, no, he died in 1980, I think. So maybe that was what revived it. There were the Lost Hitchcocks, of which Vertigo was one, re-released into cinemas, I think, in 1984 or 85. They had Rear Window and Vertigo and that sort of thing. Trouble with Harry came out. And that's when Hitchcock started to revive a little bit, and I suppose it's been on the up since then. What would make Vertigo the greatest film of all time, do you think?
Look, I think there's a lot of things. There's a lot of debate. I mean, my personal favourite Hitchcock film is Rear Window of that era. But, I mean, it is considered to be part of that golden era of Hitchcock that sort of began with, I guess, almost Rope in a way in 48 and sort of ended around Psycho, the Birds kind of era.
Yeah, and I think it's a 15-year, between Rope and the Birds and a couple of good films before that, and really no good films after the Birds.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
No. And, you know, there's a whole lot of combination of factors in there. You've got, you know, Hitchcock's classic Blonde, of course. You've got Jimmy Stewart, who is Hitchcock's classic Everyman. It's this very sweeping story of obsession. I think in many ways it wasn't too far from Hitchcock's own obsession with blondes and making them in his own image. In fact, I think there's a telly movie coming out soon about the making of the Birds and Hitchcock's obsession with Tippi Hedren a few years later. It is a very big, over-the-top, dramatic, melodramatic film in a lot of ways. And as that music we heard, that music right there that we could listen to for all day, it's overwhelming. It's almost a mystery, but it's also there's a bit of fantasy in there as well. Beautiful woman, obsessive man, and hell of an ending. I mean, you don't forget watching Vertigo after seeing it. But it's not quite as fun as his other films. Most of his other films had a huge dose of humor in it. Like you look at Rear Window immediately beforehand. It was the first, I think, Hitchcock film where it was kind of, you can almost consider it to be his big art film in a way.
When I think of how over the top it is, I think of the interior of the restaurant, when Ernie's, this restaurant in San Francisco, and how unbelievably decorated that is. And that's not out of Hitchcock's mind. I think it was just they rebuilt that restaurant, and it's overwhelming, this film, in a way. It's beautiful. The colour is beautiful.
Mm.
The acting is fantastic. It may not be the greatest film of all time, but I can understand why people say that.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite agree that it is the greatest film of all time, but it certainly is one of Hitchcock's masterpieces. Mm. And, you know, Hitchcock always deserves a spot on these lists.
But you'd be hard-pressed, perhaps, thinking of all of Hitchcock's other films, what would actually take the place of number one. If you had to name the number one greatest film of all time, would there be any other of Hitchcock's films that would actually be number one on a Sight and Sound list?
No, probably not, because I think it's one of the few Hitchcock films where all the elements work together at the peak of their form. Yeah. I mean, you know, I love Rear Window, but that's, you know, it's got Grace Kelly. Again, it's got Jimmy Stewart. It's got a lot of comedy. It's but at the same time, it's just a thriller film in a lot of ways. I say it's just a thriller film, but it is one of the greatest thriller films. But, yeah, you know, and Psycho is so iconic, mainly for that shower scene. But I think almost any scene in Vertigo you could take out and play it as an example of why Hitchcock is so revered.
That's interesting, because the year before he'd made North by Northwest, or 2 years before, I think that was his previous film, and that was also a thriller, but had comic elements in it as well.
I think this is the problem with Hitchcock is, and the reason that he didn't get a lot of respect in his time was that he made thrillers. He made popular films, which I don't know what the equivalent filmmaker would be today.
I suppose Spielberg.
Possibly Spielberg, who is, you know, who got accolades, but sort of much later in his career, and he had to make something like, he got popular
very early
votes.
On.
But he it wasn't until he made something like Schindler's List that he was actually respected as a proper filmmaker, quote unquote. Hitchcock, much the same way. It wasn't until much later in his career that people actually stopped and looked back and said, actually, no, he was making popular films, but they were really good. You know.
They were indeed. Richard Gray is our guest. We're not talking about the greatest film of all time, although we'd be happy to introduce that a little bit later on. We're talking about lists and the obsession with lists. So what does it actually mean to be on the Sight and Sound list, do you think, for a film or a filmmaker?
Look, the Sight and Sound is often considered, you know, the most prestigious of the polls that are available. Because, I mean, one, because it's been around for so long. Two, because it's compiled by some of the world's top critics. And so it's seen to have a heavy weight behind it. I mean, Roger Ebert, American film critic, describes it as by far the most respected of the countless polls of great movies, the only one most serious people take seriously. And I think to a large extent that's true. I mean, the fact that we're talking about it, it's every 10 years, so it's sort of almost a generation to consider it. I think a lot of people, though, also consider it to be one of the most elitist and stuffy lists that's ever been put to paper.
Because I reckon of that top 10, I may have seen three, perhaps.
Of that top 10...
And you might want to run through them.
I've had a quick look. Of the top 10 this year, we've got 8.5, which is Fellini. I have seen that. The Passion of Joan of Arc. Man with a Movie Camera. The Searchers. Such a wonderful film.
Yeah.
2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
Not David Bowie. Sunrise, The Song of Two Humans, The Rules of the Game, Tokyo Story, Citizen Kane, and, of course, Vertigo.
So I've seen four of them, and I should have seen more of them, but a lot of them, I mean, really. How can they honestly look at something made in 1927 or something and consider that still all these years later to be one of the best 10 films ever made?
And it's one of the problems I have with the list, that the most recent film on there, I think, is from the 60s. And I think it might actually be Space 2001, Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the most recent film. So by that definition, the peak of film stopped in the late 60s.
Yeah, they're looking at maybe for the 40 years between Sunrise, which I think was 1927, to Space Odyssey. So that's 40 years. We've had 45 years almost since then, where not one film has even nudged that top 10.
And it ignores the entire careers of people like Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola, or, you know, people that we now consider to be just as influential as Hitchcock was.
Kozlowski, all those, every director who made a big since the decline of the studio system in 1968 has been totally ignored.
Well, I mean, last time I was here, we spoke about The Godfather, and The Godfather was actually a staple on that list. And it's actually... And in fact, the previous list, The Godfather Part 1 and 2, were at number 4, but they actually changed the rules this year related films that are considered to be part of a larger whole, so such as The Godfather, Godfather Part 2, as you mentioned, Kieslowski's Three Colors trilogy or Decalogue, were to be treated as separate films for voting purposes.
Well, I think that's true, though.
Yeah.
Because, and here's another thing I want to ask you about, which is when you ask critics or directors, see, directors vote on this, as you say, and they have a different list, and that's probably slightly more modern. But when the ABC did my favourite film, and we're talking about favourite, not best, the number one was the three Lord of the Rings films. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to say they're forgotten these days, but I think if you took that snapshot now and made that list, I don't know that the Lord of the Rings films would be as high up. They were number one on that list, and they had number one, two, and three, all three of them at number one. Well, I don't think you can do that. I mean, what's the difference between asking the punters as opposed to asking the so-called experts?
And this is the big debate around this. And the reason this is seen as stuffy is because it is a group of critics who, you know, certainly do breathe a rarefied air. I mean, you know, you and I know that when we see films, we don't necessarily see them with an audience. We're often invited to see
preview screenings
and media screenings. And that's great for us because it gives us time to, you know, reflect on the film before we have to go and write it up or talk about it. But, you know, these are also, and, you know, these are people who live and breathe film, who look at film all the time. Whereas film is not, film like any other art form is a gut reaction for a lot of people. It's a subjective thing. People react to films. People love the Lord of the Rings films because they're a great big grant. They've got everything in there that you'd want to see when you go and, if you're a punter and you're paying your $25 out, you get your money's worth, you know. You know, but having said that, you know, we're about to do it all again with another three Hobbit films. I'm not quite sure I'm up for that now. You're right. I don't think that 10 years later, those films may necessarily hold up as the greatest films of all time. But that's because audience tastes change as well. And the problem with this BFI Sight and Sound list is that the film list hasn't changed for 50 years. And to me, that's not really indicating how film has changed. We've had so many technological advances in that time. We've had.
So, do you think, therefore, they should say they should retire it and say, "Radio, this is the list. We have decided that the best 10 films of the 20th century, or for the first half of the 20th century, the first 50 years of film or sound film, even. That's this list. We now have another list, which is the best, you know, 10 films from the second half of the 20th century. Because I reckon if they were to ask these critics and directors to come up with the best 10 films of the last 10 years or 12 years of the 21st century, I think you'd be scraping hard pressed to scrape together 10 films.
It's interesting because I think the highest ranked film of the 21st century is around 24, 25, and it was In the Mood for Love, the Wong Kar-wai film, which is interesting. I mean, we've had some great films in the last, you know, 12 years. I mean, I think by any measure, we've actually, we do have a lot of filmmakers that have been influenced by these greats that are actually now making great films of their own. It hasn't been a complete cultural wasteland. And I think to suggest that, you know, film stopped at a certain point is just as stuffy as saying that Citizen Kane is the only film that will ever top of list.
I never really could see it. I know everyone always talks about all the deep focus camera work and everything, but I just think that Citizen Kane was, to me, is very, very dated. But, you know, I'm not on that list. I don't vote on the list.
I think the conditions he made it under and what he achieved personally with that film, Orson Welles, a lot of people consider that to be a, you know, a forebear to, you know, the great filmmakers who have come along since. But honestly, it might be sacrilege, but yes, I've never quite seen it as the greatest film ever.
Okay. Richard Gray is our guest. We're talking about movie lists. So they're the best films. And then, you know, in the, I think, 80s or 70s into the 80s, we had the worst list, and they had the Golden Turkey Awards and all those sorts of things. People can really enjoy a worst list. And, you know, people have written books about the worst films of all time and try to watch 360-odd worst films every year or something. Do the we enjoy the worst lists a bit better?
I certainly do. I think the great thing about a worst list of films, because we don't really dislike those films. We recognise that they're trash, and that's what we need sometimes. I mean, you can't enjoy the good stuff unless you have some candy every. If you you know, unless you eat your vegetables, you're not allowed. You can't enjoy your dessert. You know,
the number of people would say to me, "Oh, that's the worst film I've ever seen," or whatever. I think, no, you don't actually go to enough films, perhaps, to know that that's by no means the worst film, because the worst films probably don't even get released.
No,
and there have been some terrible films over the years that have got out, but we just people just generally you don't see them on TV. you don't see them. You might find them on DVD.
But. Look, most of them go direct to basement, basement bins here. But, I mean, look, for a movie to be truly bad, I was talking to somebody about this the other night, like, it actually has to be boring and have no merit or whatsoever. I'm usually at least partially entertained by most films. And I think when we talk about... I think the bad films that we like on those lists are usually so bad they're hilarious. And that's what I get out of those films.
Exactly. I think you're talking about The Last Dinosaur starring Richard Boone. 1-300-800-222 is the phone number, 1-300-800-222, or you can text us 0467-922-702. 0467-922-702, like Ziggy has. Suggest To Kill a Mockingbird, Calamity Jane, The African Queen in the Heat of the Night, Manhattan, Shane, We're No Angels, High Society. Don't know that too many of them would be on the list of the greatest films of all time, but they're on Ziggy's list, and that's okay.
That's the great thing about lists. Everybody's got their own.
And that's what we want to talk about, because I also want to talk about lists. It's not just, we're not just talking about the greatest film ever made, but I want to know whether you've made a list, or maybe a list of films to watch, and you've worked your way through it, and you've achieved that. We'd like to know about that. 1-300-800-222. Come along. We only have another half an hour or so. 1-300-800-222. Richard, have you ever made a list and thought, right, I'm going to see every film on this list?
I've come across a few lists that I've wanted to see every film on. I'm currently somewhere between 600 and 1,001 films I must see before I die. I'm not quite sure what the magical moment is.
Well, whoa, whoa. That book, 1,001 films, and you've seen 600 of them.
About that.
Whew, that's pretty impressive.
I like to think so, yeah.
And you're going to aim to see all 1,001, because I reckon some of them would be pretty hard to find.
The list keeps changing. You know, some of them are very hard to find, particularly the earlier ones, but it's getting easier. I mean, we, as I said, we live in an age where things are more readily available on DVD, and the public domain stuff's on YouTube. So, like, a lot of those silent films you can download now for free. But, you know, I like those lists because they're not necessarily the 1,001 best films.
Yeah.
But it gives you a launching point. So if you, even that list the viewer called in with, you know, you look at those lists and you think, you might hear one of those films and go, you know what, I've never seen that, you know. And
let me then ask you this, someone who doesn't sign their name, and please do, on 0467-922-702. Okay, being 29 years old and never having watched Citizen Kane before or even heard of it, what is the movie about?
Citizen Kane. You're asking me to summarise Citizen Kane.
Well, I mean, you can summarise it in a sentence or two.
Well, it's sort of loosely based on the life of, William Randolph Hearst.
Newspaper
magnate in the early part of the century. And it's about his rise and fall, I guess, and the regrets he had in his life. And it starts off with him... remembering one of his great losses, Rosebud.
Rosebud. I'll spoil the ending. It's a sled.
So you don't have to see it now.
Yeah.
But it is, look, you know, it is a you know, it's a big,
it's about a big
sprawling
magnate.
Story. Yep.
And, you know, he tries to run for governor of New York or something, and he has romantic disappointments. And
he thinks it would be fun to run a newspaper.
Yeah. And, you know, that's basically what it's about. And I reckon if anyone watched it now, they'd probably struggle to work out what the fuss was about.
Possibly. And I think that's
black and white too, and there's not one single car chase in the whole film.
That's true. No, that is one thing I've always felt was lacking.
But do you think that someone who is even... Well, I mean, someone who's interested in films perhaps should have heard of it, but it doesn't get screened too often. There are a lot of big movies that never get... screened on TV. But if you watched it now, do you think you'd be impressed and think, wow, that is the greatest film ever made?
I think when people are looking at it on these lists, they're looking at it from, you know, technical levels. They're looking at it on in terms of its context. I think context is very important as well. I think when Citizen Kane came out, it was impressive for a number of reasons. It wasn't considered to be the greatest film when it came out either. And in fact, you don't... as we said, we don't see that on the list until topping the list until 1962 on Sight and Sounds poll, you know, a good 20 years after it was made.
And fair enough, too.
You know, and I think that's the thing. These lists change over time when we get to look back. And maybe some of those films that you've said in the last 12 years that don't necessarily impress now, when we write a list in 2022, 2032, yeah. we might look back and go, you know what, 2012 was a pretty good year for film.
You never know when a director, perhaps, or a star makes a great movie in 10 years' time, people will go back and reassess the films that they've made earlier. Although I was talking to PJ Hogan, because his new movie Mentalist.
I'll be talking to him this afternoon.
Okay, well, talk to him about The Humpty Dumpty Man, which was his first movie, and he thinks it's rubbish. Now, Norman Beverly Hills says Bat 21 is number 21 on his list. Louise is first. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
You want to talk about your favourite film?
Yeah, Out of Africa.
Now, why is it your favourite movie?
Well, it's like when I first saw it, I've still got it somewhere on the old, the VHS.
Yes, yeah.
And I decorated the whole cover with African, pictures and then sealed it all and like a decoupage.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
And my kids have given me since, the movie on the... DVD.
Yep. Did you see it on the big screen, though, Louise?
I didn't.
Because it's a big, big movie that you're supposed to see on the big screen.
I know, but I didn't. And it's like I've seen it, I think, just about every other time that it's been on TV or whatever. We've got pretty big screens now, as you know, with all these LCD TVs.
That's true.
And I just absolutely loved it. It's like I can't talk enough about it. Actually said to me once, how many times are you going to watch that?
What about that scene with the flamingos and all that?
It's like from beginning to end, it's just,
Okay. All righty, Louise, I'm glad that you love it, and thank you very much for letting us know. Out of Africa won the Oscar for Best Picture of 1985. I don't know that it'd be one of my favourites, but...
I think it was single-handedly responsible for sales to trips to Africa for the most part of the late 80s, I think.
And shampoo as well.
Yes.
Got that hair-washing scene, which is very memorable. But true. 1985 was when Back to the Future came out, and that's one of your favourites.
It is one of my favourites. 1985 was a great year for film. Didn't The Colour Purple come out that year as
well? Colour Purple, Witness... this was the Oscar nominees for Best Picture were Out of Africa, Witness, Colour Purple. There's another one. Prince's Honor was another one.
And I think The Purple Rose of Cairo came out that year as well.
Purple Rose of Cairo.
It's a purple year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Back to the Future because it is so completely mid-80s, but also it's such a retro film as well. It's watching it now, it some elements might seem somewhat dated, but I love it because it's just one of those capers you just get swept up in and you get carried away. But it's a period film. It's a time travel film, but it's actually a period film, and it's set in the 50s. And with the exception of, fairly memorable special effects at the very beginning and the very end, all of it is a period piece. Yeah. And I really love that about it. And to me, the acting, the writing, it's all sparkling.
Colin, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. How are you?
I'm well. Do you keep a list?
Yes, a mental list sort of thing, but my favourite film, my personal, is The Sting with Robert Redford and Paul Newman.
Gee, another Oscar winner for Best Picture. Why do you love The Sting, Colin, which is a very enjoyable film?
It is, I should say. You can watch it every time, and it just keeps you there in the seat and wants you not to move to watch it because there's so many plots.
Yeah, that's a good point. You do, it is a film that... rewards the viewer with second and third and fourth viewings, isn't it?
That's right, and I have watched it over 5 times. And Liberty Valance with James Stewart.
Yes, the man who shot Liberty Valance.
The man who shot Liberty Valance. Yeah. So, it's another one that's like, who actually did shoot him?
That's a good question, Colin. Who did shoot Liberty Valance?
Well, I'd say...
John Wayne.
John Wayne,
that's what I'd say too.
Yes.
Whew. And then you keep that mental list.
Yes, I do. And along with African Queen with Humphrey Bogart.
Hard to dislike that film, isn't it?
Oh, it's another one, it's full of action. And along with another one, I stand corrected, the one with James Stewart.
Yeah, Rear Window.
That's the one he's in the wheelchair.
Yeah, that's one of Richard's favourites. Why do you like that, Richard?
What do I like it?
Yeah.
I think, well, apart from the fact that Jimmy Stewart's in it,
yeah.
and I'll watch anything with Jimmy Stewart in it. You know, keep me here long enough and I'll start doing Jimmy Stewart impersonations. Oh. Well, it's very simple, really, and I'll explain it to you. Okay? To me, it's Hitchcock at his best. It's kind of that little smart, funny, you know, urban. It's sort of, it's hip for Hitchcock, even though he's, you know, never considered to be typically hip. Mm. But it's got so many of those wonderful scenes, just little throwaway scenes when he's looking through the different apartments. The mystery just keeps you there. Like, even, yes, I've seen it dozens of times now, and every time I'm still sort of on the edge of my seat, particularly towards the end when... you know,
Lars Thorwald comes back.
And it's sort of like he's coming in and the flash bulbs are going off. It's just a, it's such a tense, gripping film, but it's also very funny. And it's also, it's got the beautiful Grace Kelly in it, who Hitchcock loved to shoot. Time. And,
All right, Colin, why do you love it?
You know, it's from the beginning when he sees this murder down that laneway or near this building. And they wouldn't believe him, and he's got to push his point all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and they think he's away with the fairies, but he just persists and persists, and he comes out on top at the end.
All righty, Colin, thank you very much for that. Yes, the murder takes place in the apartment across the way. But then we've got all the people that he's watching, because he's there on his broken leg, and it's apparently all the stages of love that you see in that, whether it be people meeting for the first time or getting married or the old couple, you know, Sam Drucker from Green Acres. 1-300-800-222. We're talking about movie lists, maybe lists that you keep or that you know about or that you've tried to fill in. George, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Firstly, I actually had acquaintance of mine who I used to go to, like a Cinematheque night. He's a Muppet doing there, and he was just obsessive about all the movies he'd seen and sort of placing them in order. We're not talking about top ten.
Whoa. You're saying he rated every film that he saw
and
in a particular...
That, he kept changing the order. And you'd have to discuss, I think I've moved that one up a couple of notches and that one a couple of down, you know. Goodness. And it was obviously kind of, you know, his life and his passion. And he just, you know, really just enjoyed doing that. I sort of sometimes would write down things that I've actually seen, just to remember sort of, you know, a list of movies I'd seen, but I never got to that level. But, you know, I kind of appreciated the fact that, you know, for him it was a passion and a joy and something that he got a lot of pleasure out of.
Well, that's a good point. But, I mean, whether or not, you know, who knows, choose a movie at random. Back to the Future 3 was ranked at number 681 or number 576. I mean, does it really matter? That's what concerns me, George.
Well, that's what concerned him too.
Yes, that's right. I'm wondering why anyone would bother.
But, I mean, I think we should actually think about sort of lists, you know, for also not just the best of all time.
But, yes.
You know, the best for certain occasions, like the top 10 best Christmas films or the top 10 films.
Good point.
Watch at Christmas or the top 10 rom-coms or the top 10 movies you should take a date out on that you want to break up with. And,
oh my God.
Know, there can be sort of so many different lists that you have for different functions. I think, you know, so on a more serious note, there's such a bias towards English language Western films in that list. I mean, La Regla de Jeu is, I think, one of the few foreign films. There are so many amazing foreign films out there that get totally ignored, even by these critics who are supposed to be very serious at Inside and Sound. I mean, and where are the films of Tarkovsky there? I mean...
Okay. George, no worries, mate. Appreciate that. Do you keep that list? Do you have a list?
Myself?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't looked at it in a long time. It might be somewhere in the cupboards around the place, but, you know, I still carry the list around in my head of... movies that I think deserve a repeat viewing, but it's a very long list, Rod.
All right, thanks, George. Thank you very much. North Trucker says, it's high time that Hollywood remade Convoy. Now, I saw Convoy fairly recently, and that is not a bad movie. That's a perfectly good film, and why touch something that's perfectly good?
That's the thing with remakes. If they were really good to start with, you don't need to remake them, and if they weren't very good, why bother?
North Trucker also likes Apocalypto by Mel Gibson. Night Train says The Great Escape with Steve McQueen. Matty says, I watched Ben-Hur the other day with my kids and I reckon that movie was still all right. Thank you very much. And the person who wanted to know about Citizen Kane prefers Jason Statham films. Well, fair enough. Sometimes midday movies on a certain commercial channel can be better than Hollywood blockbusters. Great movie is The Blues Brothers. It has great music, action, comedy, and a car chase. Well, that's an 80s film, and that's your specialty.
I love The Blues Brothers. I must have seen that I don't know how many times. Yeah. And it's, I mean, that's another one where it's, they just threw caution to the wind and said, it doesn't matter whether this makes sense or not, we're just going to have fun with it. And I think, look, that's the thing about the lists, you know, all personal lists are going to have guilty pleasures on them. They may not ever be considered the greatest films of all time, objectively, by serious critics. The fun is in compiling them and revisiting them.
True, exactly. My favourite film is Fight Club, but I'm not supposed to talk about it, says Michael. Thank you, Michael. Jenny in Bentley says, my 18-year-old son during film studies for Year 12 watched Citizen Kane last week and loved it.
Well, there you go.
Midnight Express showbags like Esther, Godfather 1 and 2, 2001 Space Odyssey. Jumbi says, even though I know I'd like to see the Mission Impossible series, my dislike of Tom Cruise prevents me from doing so. Is there something unique about this feeling, Richard?
The unique about the feeling of disliking Tom Cruise? I think I won't say anything about Tom Cruise in particular.
Yes.
But
Those films aren't that great.
No, they're not. Some of them are okay. They have their good moments in there. Like, you know, just as pure popcorn cinema, they're fantastic. But, pretty much disposable once you've seen them. I think seeing a big star in a film sometimes will actually put you off because you can't disappear into the film. It's just you see Tom Cruise and it's Tom Cruise on screen for 2 hours. You know.
Andrew in Linfield, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I have a sort of a list of, in my brain, of good movies and bad ones, but my all-time best movie would have to be Oh, What a Lovely War.
Oh, dear. Yes, Richard Attenborough, wasn't it? Directed it?
Yeah.
Why do you like that one?
Oh, it is, I mean, it's rather strange in that it's a musical comedy about the First World War,
yes,
and it is the most viciously anti-war movie I have ever seen.
There's very few pro-war films.
And Maggie Smith is magnificent in it.
Yeah.
The casting is out of this world, and I can remember when it was first released, which must be 40 years ago.
More than that, about 45, I think. It was about mid-60s, wasn't it, or later than that, perhaps?
But I can remember I saw it quite a number of times, and I was talking about it at home, and my father became so interested, and he was an old army officer from the Second World War, that I took him along to see it, and I thought, oh God, this might actually kill him. It nearly did because he laughed so much.
Okay, all right.
It is exactly as I remember the Second World War.
Fair enough. Thanks very much for that, Andrew. Oh, What a Lovely War. Karen is next. Good morning, Karen.
How are you going?
Very well, Karen.
Yeah. I split my list with movies into the time frame of my life and what affected me, like, really stood out. And when I was very little, I don't know why, but my mother let me watch with her Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
God.
And that has affected me all my life. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, I think, is right up there with...
I think it's Liz Taylor's best film by a long way.
It's fantastic, absolutely. And then at different times in my life, Magnolia stood out a fair bit for me. 21 Grams and Dead Man Walking.
Boy, very serious movies there.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, thank you very much for that. Helen is probably our biggest film fan. Hello, Helen.
Hi, good morning. Listening to this, I mean, how long's a piece of string?
Exactly.
And I thought to myself, Rod and Richard, what makes a film great? What makes a film that you can watch again and again? Some that are great, like Sophie's Choice, which I could not watch again and again.
Yes, good point.
I think it's amazing. And Cabaret. I was saying to your producer, I think Cabaret is a film I can watch again and again. I think it's a very well-made film, and it's very chilling because it captures an era.
An era when Liza Minnelli was a star.
But also
that's the era that it captures.
That scene in the park where, you know, the young
long time since I've seen it.
Boy starts singing. And I just found that captured an era that was amazing. I thought that was an amazing film. I think films like 1900 by Bertolucci is a fantastically made film. And I just think my lists are all, you know, like that your previous list, that they're so different at different times in your life and what affects you. And, I mean, there are favourites and films that I think are well made. I've seen Citizen Kane a few times, and I must admit when I saw it as I was older, I saw different things in it. Vertigo, which I saw when I was 15, when it first came out, I don't think I really understood it all, you know.
That's a good point. You really need to see Vertigo a couple of times to even follow the story.
Mm.
Particularly when you're 15, you don't understand
what's going
on, I don't think, in life. Yeah. But I do find your conversation very interesting, and I think there are so many different lists. Raise the Red Lantern, you know, I think is the most brilliant film. And why do some people find something brilliant and other people are bored? Nobody's mentioned Gone with the Wind, I noticed.
No, and I'm... I know there are many people who love Gone with the Wind, and it's a good movie, but I wouldn't... I know Bill Collins is his favourite.
Films of all time.
It's a great movie, there's no doubt about it. But
It is. It's an epic of epic proportions. But this is a great conversation. All right. One could talk for hours.
Thank you, Helen. We've got a million people we've got to get to. Just before we move on, though, and tell me about one of the things that Helen says. Sophie's Choice is a great movie, but I could not watch... I've never watched it since it came out. That's 30 years ago. And I don't want to go through it again, but I recognise it as being a great movie.
It's a point I make a lot to a lot of people. It's like, you know, there's never any sort of lazy Saturday afternoon when you're sitting around with mates going, you know what we haven't seen in a while? Schindler's List. Let's pop that on. You know, and it's a great film, and no one's going to deny it's about an important subject that needs to be remembered and that it's a really well and emotionally told film. But, you know, there are films you can appreciate, you see once. I remember seeing Darren Aronofsky's second film when it came out, Requiem for a Dream. And it's such a powerful, you know, mind-blowing film that leaves you completely wasted. And I thought, I'm not doing that again.
No.
Brilliant, but I'm not doing that again. And I think that that's the thing. And as Helen was saying, it's very much, sometimes it's your time in your life. It reminds me of that scene in High Fidelity when he arranges all of his records chronologically. So he has to remember where he was in order to, what he was doing in order to find that record. And it's kind of like that with film, I think, sometimes. You know, at that point in your life, it was a very important film, but it may not be 10 years later.
Jason, good morning.
Morning.
Do you keep a list?
I do, sort of, but I find it hard to identify a favourite movie because you end up liking so many.
Yeah. Well, we're not necessarily talking about favourites. We are talking about lists this morning, but you do have one or two.
I was flying back from Europe recently and I saw the original 12 Angry Men and I'd never seen it before.
Oh, that is one of the all-time great movies.
I thought it was magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, the acting is superb, the story, the twists, the turns, everything about it is fantastic.
I think, as an indication of how much I enjoyed it, it was only after the film had finished and then it hit me, I thought, that whole film only took place in one room.
Yeah.
I think they go to the bathroom at one stage for about 10 seconds, but it's just 12 blokes sitting around a table. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, there's a little bit at the end and a little bit at the start, but yeah, the, you know, 99% of the film takes place in that one room, and it's fantastically done. And everything about it, and the, if you read about the filming of it as well, where they weren't all in the room. They shot all those scenes one-on-one with no one else there but the person who's talking directly to the camera in those scenes. Very interesting. Hey, Jace, thanks very much for that. And I also like the fact that you can watch that in a plane. How good's that? Marjorie, hello.
Oh, good morning. I'm sorry, I really don't have a list. But, I just would like to hear a comment on the tales of Beatrix Potter where not a word is spoken.
Yeah.
It's the Royal Ballet.
Yes.
You familiar with that movie?
Marjorie, I was dragged to see that film in about 19-something or other, and I've got to say, because my sisters were into ballet and my mother loves ballet, and I don't know that it was the best fit for me, but I certainly recognise it as being a very enjoyable film. But you love it.
Well, not a word was spoken.
Yeah.
And it was, I was just amazed at how clever the Russian was that did the costumes and how they were able to perform that whole movie.
Yeah. It's certainly a remarkable film, and Marjorie, I'm really glad you mentioned it, and thank you very much for that.
It's just something that I would always put at the top of my list.
Yeah.
And just because of how clever the whole movie was put together.
All right. Hey, Marjorie, thank you very much. Yes, The Tales of Beatrix Potter. I mentioned too many dance films.
I've got a soft spot for musicals. I just came from a musical last night, actually.
What was that musical?
I went and saw the new Legally Blonde musical.
Oh, really?
That's out, yeah.
Whew. It was, hello.
It's a trend, movies that have become stage musicals.
Well, yes.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
But I actually, one of my favourite films of all time is a musical, if not my favourite film.
Your favourite film of all time? I think you share this with David Stratton.
I think I might actually. I'm sure we're not the only two people in the world. It would be Singing in the Rain.
Why?
It's a funny one. And it's one of those things I always say it when I'm pressed. And if not that, I'll throw in The Godfather, which is, I know, two very similar films.
Yeah, very similar.
Singing in the Rain is one of those films that I just find flat out enjoyable. And even if it was the worst film ever made, which it's not, I think I would still find it enjoyable because I love every single character in it. It's a movie about movies, and that's done so
I
much
like
now.
Yeah.
But it's also it's a movie that talks about why we love movies and reminds us of why we love movies at the same times. And you know, so many spectacular dance sequences in there, and comedy, and at the very least, Donald O'Connor.
Okay,
you know.
All righty, let's try and wrap up the final few callers. Scott is next. G'day, Scott.
There you go.
Good, mate. You want to, I point out that we're going to New Zealand in the next half hour as well, and you want to take us there right now.
Best film, World's Fastest Indian.
The World's Fastest Indian is the best film ever made.
Oh, yeah, mate. Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I'm from Invercargill, so it was where it was filmed, and just the old fella, the way he battled, to get over there and couldn't run, and, just keep battling, and, let him go, set a speed record, and it still stands today.
How did you feel when you had a Welsh actor playing a New Zealander, though?
Oh, it didn't really matter, mate. It's okay. Anthony Hopkins, isn't it?
Yes, very good actor. Yeah. And a very enjoyable film, Scott.
Sure.
And, sorry, yes. Hang on a minute. Go
Hannibal
on.
The series are pretty good too.
Which one? I'm sorry.
Hannibal Lecter series.
Yes. Oh, you're a big Anthony Hopkins fan.
Yeah. There's too many to list. Eh? Yeah. Once the Warriors, another good one.
Yes, that's the feel good comedy of the year.
Yeah.
All right, Scott. Thanks, mate. We're not necessarily listing favourite films, but that's what it's turned into, and that's fine. There's been some good New Zealand films over the years, haven't there? A lot. Drew, good morning.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Mate, the top of my list, mate, is The Shawshank Redemption.
Now, why is that?
Oh, mate, well, you get locked up for a false imprisonment and you battle the fox to get out.
Well, hang on. He did kill the bloke. There's no false... He didn't? Oh, it's a long time since I've seen it.
Apparently, he was framed for shooting his wife and his wife's lover.
Yeah, okay. So who did kill them?
Apparently another criminal that he was locked up with in the same jail.
Okay, all right. It's a little bit like The Fugitive. I mean, lot of people love The Shawshank Redemption. I think it's number one on the IMDb's film list.
And I think it's all due to the, what's his name? I forgot his name now. The black fellow with freckles.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman, that's the one.
Yes, one of the first films he did, those voiceovers that have become...
He's one of the lovable characters of the world at the moment.
Well, everyone loves Morgan Freeman. Why not? I'm sure he's a hell of a nice bloke.
Hey, just getting back to Back to the Future, mate, do you realise that the first Back to the Future in the DeLorean, the time was actually set for 2012?
Was it?
Yeah.
2012? Are you sure it wasn't 2015?
No, it was 2012.
So it's October 2012.
Yeah.
No, I think it's 2015.
I think it was November, September 15, 2012.
No, definitely not. But, Drew, thank you very much for that. Now, the reason I say that is because we know he goes back to 1955, he goes back to 1885.
It's 30 years. It's 100 years over course of 100 and something years in a town. He originally the movie originally wanted to be about how a movie changes over the course of 30 years.
How a town changes.
How a town changes over the course of 30 years, and then to go forward another 30 years to 2015.
All right. Jim, good morning.
G'day there, fellas. Look, what prompted me to call was your comments earlier about a movie sticking in your brain because of a time in your life and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
When I was very, very young, has anybody seen the original Man in the Iron Mask?
What made in when?
Oh, geez. I was very young and I'm sure it was black and white, so probably in the 50s or something.
I haven't seen it, but you're saying it's very good?
Oh, look, seriously, I'm not sure if I was like 6 or 7 or 10, but I would just sat there riveted and gobsmacked, and the scene where he was in the mask and there was the dramatic music and it captured me. It was just an amazing, and I haven't been able to find it ever since, so I was just wondering if you guys had seen it and what you thought of it, that's all.
I haven't, unfortunately, and I think for the very reason that you haven't seen it in all those years, Jim, is because it's very hard to find.
And I think the remake was done, but I can't bring myself to watch the original.
Exactly. If you're desperate, fine, write to Doug Anderson in the Herald. He might be able to help you. Jim, thanks very much for that. And Alan in Brisbane, good morning.
Good morning, boys. I got a few here. One of the Papillon was Steve McQueen. And
great movie.
Yeah, fantastic. And two other movies, fellas, that stand out with the scenes in Psycho with the copper standing across the road with those sunglasses.
Mm.
Cool Hand Luke with the sunglasses again.
Yes. You've got to think about sunglasses, Alan.
Oh, no, just those scenes, mate. You know, those.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Thank you very much, Alan. But Psycho is an incredible movie.
Mm.
And made in black and white.
So incredible that when they remade it scene for scene, it didn't work.
It's amazing. You just need that light touch, don't you? Joe the Truckie says one of the worst movies is Spaceballs. That was pretty terrible.
Mm.
Mad Max says Andrew in the Blue Mountains. Joe the Lone Trucker says Forrest Gump. Legends of the Fall says CJ. 16 Blocks with Bruce Willis. The Lion King, says Jenny. Soylent Green, says Matt.
It's people.
Don't say. Any Marx Brothers film, says Elliot. Lawrence of Arabia. Ben-Hur gets all the credit, but when it comes to big epic films, nothing comes close, says Johnny in Lidcombe. Woody Allen and 1900. The Coen Brothers films. Yeah, I enjoy the Coen Brothers films, even though they're all the same. All right, hello. Someone has texted in the picture of the DeLorean, October 26th, 1985. So that's it, October 26th, 1985. That's the day it starts. And June
27,
2012.
What?
Okay.
No,
that's what it's got here. We'll get to that in a second. John in Bega is our last caller. G'day, John.
Oh, g'day. Thanks for holding on. Yeah, I can't watch movies more than once, generally speaking, but Fargo's one I love going back to. I just love Fargo, how it all unfolds.
Yep.
On the negative, anything with Vin Diesel in it.
Oh, really?
I can't stand it.
I won't hold you down and force you to watch, what was that, The Pacifier or something? Terrible stuff. Hey, thanks very much for that, John. Do you keep a list, Richard, of all the films you've seen?
I do.
How many are you up to?
The list had a break in it, unfortunately, but it'd have to be. Well, given that I've seen 600 of the 1,001 films I Must See Before You Die, I'd say that I've seen a few thousand in there, at least. To be more accurate than that, I'll have to get back to you.
Have you ever set yourself the task of watching everything other than those 1,001s? Have you thought, I've got to watch all the Woody Allen films, all the Martin
Scorsese? That's exactly one of those ones I've done, Woody Allen. And I think that's what happens with these lists. When you take a big list like 1,001, you'll find a director, you'll find a filmmaker and go, I really liked his stuff. And as you said before, I'm going to go back and find everything else he's done. And that's the beauty of film. It's constant discovery. You know?
Exactly right. Thank you very much for that, Richard Gray. Yeah, Wikipedia says 2015 for Back to the Future, but I'm looking at this picture. It says 2012.
He actually goes to 2015, but the dial might say 2012.
It's time for the latest ABC News.
Australia's longest-running radio program, The Country Hour, has New South Wales covered. A team of specialist rural reporters covering agriculture and resources, weekdays from noon. You can't afford to miss The Country Hour.